New year, same great savings. All in the Kroger app. Get Kroger Spiral Sliced Ham for 89 cents a pound with your card and an additional $25 purchase limit too. Then get large avocados or mangoes for 99 cents each with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Well, it's Thursday night. You know what that means. I am here with SP3 for your Ring of Honor post show. A couple of things bigger than wrestling to acknowledge today. Today is the passing of Brody Lee, the anniversary of that date. And just wanted to take a moment because that is such a bigger loss than losing a wrestler, right? These are human beings behind everything. And I just think it's incredible the way that Amanda Huber has moved through things and the way that her sons are carrying on that love of wrestling. I think is such an incredible and beautiful thing and something he would be so proud of. And I'm sure the young men that they're going to grow into is something he'd be even more proud of than that. So just wanted to take a moment and acknowledge that. And also, unfortunately, yesterday there was another loss in the wrestling world of Jack Stain, a standout in NWA. He had complications post heart attack, unfortunate passing on Christmas Day, which is absolutely brutal. So to those affected, we just wanted to send our condolences here at Fightful. Tough way to start off a broadcast. You never love to do that, but certainly would feel irresponsible not to acknowledge those things. But we've got some wrestling to talk about, guys. Get in your super chats tonight. No TNA post show on the back of this. They had another best of show because they run from the grind. So we are here with your ROH post show. We can go as long as we damn want, but I think we'll probably finish up around the same time. We do ask that you leave a thumbs up on this video as well and head over to FightfulSelect.com because even when Sean Rossap is out of office, he's still bringing you scoops down the stretch of 2024 this holiday season. So please go over there and check that out. He's actually at the MSG house show, I believe, today, which is a fun way to spend the day after Christmas as a wrestling fan. But this is the other side of Christmas stream. We're getting a final ROH broadcast in here before the new year. SP3 set up with a brand new mic, rocking and rolling. I've got Verizon over here. I think I'm not glitchy so far. Hopefully I'm in this century with all fiber of my internet optic service. Fingers crossed. But SP3, how's your holiday? How you doing? You went to Final Battle. So much to catch up on with you. What's going on?
Yes, it was a Hammerstein weekend last weekend. I was at Final Battle in the Hammerstein Ballroom last Friday. Saturday, I was here with all of y'all on the Collision post-show and what I thought was one of the better Collision episodes of the year. And ratings kind of worked out for them with the college football that led in as well. And then Sunday, I was at the taping for AEW Dynamite. So I got to see AEW Dynamite twice this week, because I watched it last night as well. And now I'm back here, back with Kate on a Thursday, my favorite part of Thursday. And she's got fiber optics. She got the Fios. Fios out here in these streets.
God bless us, everyone. I've got working internet, I do. Holiday miracles are real. We, of course, do wish a happy holidays to everybody tuning in right now. Hanukkah starting the same day as Christmas. Lots to celebrate this time of year, so let's real quick before we jump into this talk about Final Battle. Kind of mixed results on the post show. Over 4,500 of you joined me for that post show. I was broadcasting from my parents' basement. Thank you so much for the outstanding support on that. But kind of some mixed results, SP3. A lot of people did not like that Athena retained. A lot of people kind of underwhelmed by the Cardona Jericho match. So in what seemed like a more built top of the card, people were more disappointed with that than I think the bottom of the card, which people were more pleasantly surprised by. A lot of love for that Survival of the Fittest match with the surprise title changing hands. The Nigel moment, obviously huge for not just for me as a fan, but everybody that got to see Nigel McGuinness come back in a pure rules match at Hammerstein just felt so right. what was it like being there live? And were the live takeaways about the same as kind of the reactions that we were getting on that post show?
No, I would say the live takeaways was much more positive. People were positive. People were shocked at Athena winning in the main event, but I don't think it was like shock and angry. It was like shock. Oh, okay. That just happened. More of like kind of like that, more than like shock. Oh my God, I can't believe they did this. What are they doing? Type of stuff. So I think it was much more positive in the building and being there live than it was kind of for the people watching at home. Even for something that I admit was probably the worst match on the card, Jericho and Cardona. I had a whole bunch of fun singing New York, New York by Frank Sinatra. So that's what I'm gonna take away from that matchup. And sure. I feel like, yeah, a lot of the undercard over delivered, especially like a match like Jay Lethal versus QT Marshall. That was way more fun than anyone probably signed up for. The Righteous and Sons of Texas was good. The opener was a lot more fun than I thought it would be. And we got the big return of Danhausen. I think that the show will probably be remembered most for Nigel McGuinness returning. And the great match that he had with Lee Moriarty, and then Commander and Blake Christian. I thought that those two guys kind of like elevated themselves with their performance in Survival of the Fittest. Survival of the Fittest, I felt like going into it, especially people in like my section, was just like, oh man, we got three more matches to go. I totally forgot about Survival of the Fittest. It was like the one match that people didn't remember was going on. And then when people were coming out, it's like, oh man, we're going to be here for like another hour. And then when you got into the match, like midway through, it was just like, oh, okay, they got us. We were here for it. Once you get the elimination of Brian Cage, it was a lot more investment in the matchup because you knew there was going to be a new champion. And that Hammerstein crowd hated Blake Christian. They rallied behind Commander, so it was a great atmosphere for that matchup. So I'll remember those great matchups, but yeah, I mean, I feel like Athena and Billy Starks was not as good as last year's Athena and Billy Starks, and also the ending, it just kind of ended.
Very abruptly.
It was very abrupt on something that you would think would be like a near fall, and you would get the big pop in Hammerstein, and It was over. I think that was probably why there was so much kind of shock and silence. The result is because you did not think that was going to be the result after, especially if you watched the match last year, you had no clue that was going to be the result. So it was a choice. It was a decision. I appreciate that I do this show with Kate, because Kate was like a good mother who tries to prepare you for losing in the championship game. Like, I don't know. They got that kid on the other team. They're really good at that game. You know, they got a bigger game, you know, the next game. So he's going to want to impress in this one. She kept warning me. She was like, they got the TV thing coming up, so they might not do it here.
You know, I thought they still were going to, and it was actually, I loved the go home match, that tag where she was beating the crap out of Billy and her opponents, like as a use of tandem offense. And it was you who said, you know, the way she was beating the crap out of three people like that, including her tag partner, made me think maybe she isn't going over. So some tandem like comfort food exchange between us, I think, about what was possibly going to happen going into that match. But just Ricardo saying, Merry Christmas, KSP3 and chat. I haven't talked to. Well, Merry Christmas and happy holidays to you. Let's dig into Final Battle a little bit more since we do have some time on the other side. I agree with you. The overwhelming reaction on the post show was, what the hell are we doing with Athena? Because I think a lot of people feel like, and how I felt after a well-executed, but I think creatively poor decision of what they're doing with MIT. What are we going to do? Realign Billy under the MIT brand again? We just did that last year immediately after Final Battle. Or is it just going to be like, well, we don't have anything to do with Deonna Purrazzo. Let's send her down and we'll have her beat Athena. Like, I think that was the fear, is that people were like, if not Billy now, when, who, kind of thing. But certainly seems like we might be headed back toward a third time's the charm story for Billy Starks. But Shane Monster saying, TMDK SP3 French heads. Talked myself down from Final Battle angle. Still unsubscribing for now. need to see post Jericho, ROH, and Billy Dunn right. So a couple more things to dig into with Final Battle. I don't know if it was immediately evident in the crowd. I think it was to a lot of people just based on what I was kind of seeing from people that were there. But Bandido comes out as a surprise. Not a total surprise if you're subscribed to FightfulSelect.com. Best $5 in the biz. But unfortunately, just immediately concusses himself on a dropkick. That was later confirmed, I think, by Wrestling Observer and suspected by many because he just was not getting up to his feet. So I thought we were going to get into this really interesting program between Bandido, who's been going after some outlaws, wink, wink, and headed toward Jericho. Him to throw to Jericho is something that I would love. Like, that feels like a perfect champion to have on ROH. Plenty of ROH history with him. Plenty of just great matches sitting there for him, fresh matches, because he hasn't been around too much. So I was really, really excited about that. And now we might have to pivot, which is a bummer. The Jericho New York Minute stuff was sustaining itself through this. So we'll have to see. But could you kind of tell immediately what had happened when you were there live? And were you excited about that possibility, only for it to probably be ripped out of our hands a little bit, depending on how severe this concussion is?
Yeah, I popped for Bandito's return. I was like, oh, that's cool. He came out, he comes in, does the springboard dropkick, and when he didn't get up immediately after the springboard dropkick, I was like, oh, he's hurt. I literally was telling people in my section, I was like, oh, he's hurt. Oh, he's not right. And then the way he was moving, and then I saw everybody kind of running towards him, and he wasn't running at everybody. He was kind of standing in place, and then the awkward way things ended there. It felt like the show was on, like, some real momentum, despite the fact that I thought that Cardona and Jericho wasn't very good. I thought that show still had momentum, even with that, with Bandito coming out, and could have maintained that into the main event if the main event came out a little bit better as well. But yeah, it was an unfortunate kind of accident. But yeah, I knew immediately, especially being there live, I was like, yeah, something ain't right. He looked like he got hurt there, and that's kind of deflating. I felt like the crowd got back up for the start of Billy and Athena, and then that had a kind of a flat ending as well. So it's like, yeah, I can understand why there was anger and disappointment post the show, especially for people watching at home, not being able to be there live. I can understand if you're like, oh no, Final Battle, I was pissed off with. I don't blame you.
Yeah, we have seen this trend that I'm not like in love with of Tony Khan booking leaving you disappointed. And I'm for that every so often, but it seems like now that's like the thing to expect between everything going on with the Death Riders, between what we got out of this. So people were frustrated. Some people, I think people that might not be following the product as closely, were also hoping that Cardona was going to win, that might be something to stake their hat on, that maybe Cardona is someone that would be an active champion who's around. I didn't think that was the case. I felt like that was probably just a bit of a relationship repair and a fun New York program that they could snap together and things like that. But I think people felt so unsatisfied by the Jericho thing that it kind of compounded what happened with Billy and Athena. A lot more of you watching now than the beginning of the show. We'd love to see you guys filtering in. It happens more on this show than any other. We get to get like a little late ratings bump over here. So over 2,200 of you watching now. So for those of you who are here at the beginning of the show, sorry for the redundancy, but we are going to remind you to subscribe to FightfulSelect.com. Plenty of scoops going up there over the holidays. It's a big contract year, and keep in mind that a lot of contracts do tend to end at the end of the year. So you'll probably be hearing about some more renewals and maybe some more people testing free agency off of that. We also have World's End still to come this weekend. So keep an eye out for that, because we're heading right into that. And there's always scoops coming out of pay-per-views. And last we had heard on Fightful Select, Kenny Omega would be ripe for a return there. So keep an eye out on that. Also join the Fightful Select Discord, a really great community to talk to with an Ask SRS channel. So you can bug him all the time. If you can't text him to bug him like I always do, you can at least hop in that Discord and bug him all the time over there. So I do want to circle back to the Nigel moment, but I think that Jericho Cardona match was kind of what we had been saying we were fearing, of just like, there, the in-ring's not going to be there to kind of overcome the build. There were some good crowd reactions, but it was just like, we've seen this Jericho match constantly, like the slow and plodding, and people would say he just needs fresh opponents because we're stuck in the vortex. No, it was still not very good. Like, and surprise, surprise, he retains by interference. So not great. No,
yeah, and both guys need plunder to have a good matchup, and you didn't give them plunder.
Well, and you kind of can't in Hammerstein, right? We got that bull rope match with no blood because what GCW is about to run into in what, 10 days? I'm nervous for that pay-per-view too. I'm nervous for GCW. But guys, leave a thumbs up. Get in those super chats. No humper chats, but get in those super chats. And subscribe if you haven't already to the Fightful YouTube channel. Sean's got a lot of interviews and shorts always coming up on there that you're going to want to check out. So support us in the free ways if you would be so kind as well. But biggest moment of the night for me as a fan, I think probably the high point maybe of the pay-per-view was not only Nigel McGuinness returning, not only the incredible S talk between him and Shane Taylor about, like, just because you got hair around it doesn't make pussy. And then, it was so good. And then he's like, you are what you eat. And he's like, you're Lee Moriarty's asshole then. So good. So good. But the match, like, you would not believe that Nigel has had the layoff that he has, because coming back to fight in the Casino Gauntlet is one thing. That's actually more chaotic than I think people probably gave that credit for. Fighting Bryan Danielson, expectations were very high. I felt they were met. You're also in there with the best wrestler in the world. A pure match is a different thing to return to. That is a completely different psychology battle. And I was so blown away by just over 17 minutes, I think. And I loved the way that the pure rules came in to play, because it felt like old Nigel McGuinness and clever current day Lee Moriarty and some incredible wrestling in between. Like, this felt like, God, an ROH pure match at Hammerstein Ballroom, like you want it. Like, this was just, everything I wanted as a fan. We kind of broke down on the ROH post show, the each rope break and the psychology behind it, and I cried. It was a whole thing. But I think, like, what was so impressive to me was it was so much better than the moment of Nigel returning to Hammerstein and, oh my God, the longest pure champion of all time. The match was fantastic. Like, he could have coasted. It's Nigel at Hammerstein and Rick Abani's on commentary. That's already helping you three quarters of the way there. So the fact that the match was as excellent as it was, and I think for me, probably my match of the night, surprise, surprise, I know. But, like, I just was so impressed by how much it outkicked the coverage of even what I was expecting in ring, which was a high level. But I just thought it was such a clever way to have a wrestling story unfold in the way that it was. What was it like being there live for the return? And did you agree that it was like, it was, you don't hear people pop for technical wrestling a lot, and people were popping for this pure match.
It was like Nigel took us on, like, a time machine back to, like, the late 2000s in the Hammerstein Ballroom, and especially it being 15 years since his last match in Hammerstein against Bryan Danielson at Glory by Honor. It was just the perfect person. Like, as soon as he came out, I was just like, oh, Kate was right. There you go. There you go. Let's do it. And then the match got going. And like you said, they just told a superb story, and every rope break mattering, and the open fist, Nigel doing like the Eddie Guerrero stuff, like with the dropping down. So Lee gets the warning on the closed fits and stuff like that. Like, Nigel is just so smart on how he worked. And I 100% agree with the point that you made of this type of match is so different from the two other matches that Nigel has wrestled so far, where, you know, Casino Gauntlet, there's a reason why for years, the past two decades in WWE, when someone gets injured, they return in the Royal Rumble because they can take a couple of spots, do a couple of spots, lay down for a bit, get up, get eliminated. That's it. That's the end of your day. It's pretty much like if you're a wrestler, I can understand that that's a little bit easier than going through a one-on-one matchup. And then him and Bryan Danielson, that's like a greatest hits type of thing. You had to do, you had to hit your certain points. You had to do your greatest hits. Nigel busts out the jawbreaker lariat. Bryan has to bust out the jawbreaker lariat. And then the
men, if you've lost your hair, it does not mean you can't find it again. Try Hims Hair Loss Solutions, and you'll be joining hundreds of thousands of subscribers who have found their hair again. Hims provides you with convenient and quality access to a range of hair loss treatments that work, all from the comfort of your couch. It makes treating hair loss simple with doctor-trusted options and clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil that can regrow hair in as little as 3 to 6 months. Choose between personalized chewable, oral, spray, and serum treatments to find what works best for you. The process is simple and 100% online. There are no uncomfortable doctor visits. Answer a few questions and a medical provider will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your treatment is sent directly to you for free. No insurance is needed and one low price covers everything from treatments to ongoing care. Hims has hundreds of thousands of trusted subscribers so they can help you get your confidence back too with visibly thicker and fuller hair. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/fightful. That's HIMS.com/Fightful for your personalized hair loss treatment options. That's HIMS.com/Fightful. Results vary based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription products require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if a prescription is appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for full details and important safety information.
This just in, hot off the bench press. Planet Fitness has added new strength equipment. Save $28 or more when you join today, and you can be one of the first to try it out. We're raising the bar with new benches, and our new hack squat will have you actually looking forward to leg day. Plus, we're still repping all of the best-in-class equipment we've always had, with most clubs open 24 hours, so you can work out your way on your time. So let's do this. Join Planet Fitness today and save $28 or more. Just $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends January 10th. See home club for details.
Cool finish at the end. This one is totally different because it's basically Nigel versus a younger Nigel, someone who uses the pure rules to his advantage. And in the end, him using the pure rules to his advantage and working over him and working on the rope breaks and making him run out of that in the end paid off because he gets the Border City stretch in, puts his feet on the rope, gets more leverage, and gets the win in the end. Everything that happened in the matchup, it paid off in the end of the match, and you can tell, especially being in the post media scrum, how exuberant Lee Moriarty was. He had a smile on his face from ear to ear. He could not answer a question without a big smile on his face, and he had every right to be because he went out there and had one of the best matches on the show. I think it's either this or the survival of the fittest. And that's the great thing about these ROH pay-per-views is that they give you kind of a smorgasbord, because the people that are going to love Nigel McGuinness versus Lee Moriarty, they're going to hate the survival of the fittest. But the people that love survival of the fittest probably are bored by Lee Moriarty and Nigel McGuinness. So that's a great thing about the Ring of Honor pay-per-views and AEW pay-per-views.
You get it. I loved them both. I loved it all.
Me too. Me too.
We're just built different. But there were a couple of things that really stood out in that match too. The moment where Lee used his final rope break, when he put his foot on the rope, like just barely, psychologically at home, you were like, oh my God, does he have a rope break left? Because his first two came so early in the match that you were like, oh my God, did Nigel just win? Does Lee even have a rope break? He does have a rope break. Oh my God. Like the amount of emotion you felt in just one very, very small thing was so brilliant. And the other thing is with the Border City stretch and Umapladas in that match, I loved Lee using the London Dungeon a couple times in there too. It was just fantastic. But Nigel, I mean, if you're doing a lariat and you're not Nigel McGuinness, you are in some sense kidding. Like at this point, like his lariat now is still just like there to wreck you. But the transitions in and out of the Umapada and the Border City stretch, I thought were some of the best wrestling that I saw all year. And there's something about, I think the way that Nigel knows how to take both of those submissions, and because he's so good at putting them on. Like, he knows both sides of that coin of how to make that look the most effective as you can. Because if you see someone not selling an omoplata, and if you see someone not really selling the Border City Stretch well, it takes me out. Like, I'm so uninterested if you're not going to sell those. Because when sold correctly, it looks so painful and so punishing. So that was a whole bunch of fun for me. But let's get into tonight's episode of Ring of Honor. Almost 3,000 of you watching across platforms. Thank you so much for joining us during your holiday week. We wish you the best in 2025. This will be January 2nd next week because we're a week after Christmas here. So there you go. But we start off with Blake Christian and AR Fox. And this, of course, came out of that Survival of the Fittest match that we were just talking about. I think a lot of people were pleasantly surprised by Blake Christian's ability to get heat in that match. Like, he's worked heel and he's gotten heat before, but he was getting like heat, like the good shit. Like, he was getting the real stuff in that match. And because it came down to him and Commander, who's a growing fan favorite and has been throughout the C2, there was just something really special about the work being done with those two, not only stylistically, but like all the underhanded and cagey and conniving stuff that Blake Christian was doing that we're familiar with, but he hasn't been profiled on ROH TV all that much. So getting to see that like come to life and the crowd really just sinking their teeth into it was so much fun. Dastardly heel here once again, winning with the curb stop on AR Fox. But AR Fox, well, he was in that Survival of the Fittest match too, a standout for sure. Like, he was one of the earlier eliminations, but just reminded us all what he's capable of. Would love to see these two on ROH more. This might be a symptom of the tapings that they got used again here, but I love watching them wrestle each other. And in general, I would like to see them on my screen more often. But what did you think of this match and any other sentiments that you wanted to echo from the pay-per-view there as well? It sounded like it was very loud in there for Blake Christian's performance.
Oh, yeah. The crowd hated Blake Christian, which made me love him because if you don't know, I love heels. And Blake
True
Christian.
Heels.
Yes, true heels. Blake Christian, I discovered he is a great heel from his work in GCW, and he did great stuff over there. He tried to kind of do the same act, but kind of go into like House of Torture ways of getting heat from the New Japan fans in the Best of Super Juniors earlier this year, which didn't work out well, didn't work for everybody.
Nothing good has ever come out of House of Torture.
But
Jeremy Lambert, you hear me, Jeremy Lambert?
Here in Ring of Honor, here in front of the Hammerside crowd, it worked really well. They had the right opponent for him in AR Fox, kind of capitalizing on their great exchanges in the Survival of the Fittest. And like you said, man, that crowd was so hot for that final two between Commander and Blake Christian. And just the Hammerside crowd, I think these three shows of ROH Final Battle, AEW Christmas Collision, and Dynamite on 34th Street. You gotta. I think that we all as fans need to be like, AEW, you need to go to Hammerstein twice a year. There's no question. Do always Christmas year, but do one in the spring, like a May, sure, June type of thing. You need to come twice a year because it just feels like a hot, it feels like something you want to be at. I watched the first two matches of Dynamite on 34th Street. I was at my mom's place and I watched it with my nephew, and my nephew told me, he was like, I haven't watched wrestling in the longest time. And I watched it with him and he just saw the crowd and he was like, oh, you went to this? He was like, I would have wanted to go to this. He was like, it seemed like a lot of fun. And he instantly was like, oh, I really like Will Ospreay. I really like Darby Allin. And I would love to be in the crowd for Ricochet and throw toilet paper. That was it. That was his main takeaways from watching like the first 30, 40 minutes of Dynamite. So yeah, Hammerside Ballroom is a place that AEW needs to visit probably more often after these three shows. And they were good here for the show. And overall, like on this episode of Ring of Honor, I would say like a lot of the show, I was like looking at the matches and I was watching the matches and I was just had this overwhelming feeling of, these are the people that should be on an episode of Ring of Honor. or sure. Even if it is someone who probably should be on AEW, at least it was done for the right reasons here. Like sure. Someone making their debut on this show. It was for the right reason. It plays into their character. We should not have people that should not be here and should be on AEW. We should have the people that should be on Ring of Honor. And this was this opening matchup is an example of that. These are two people that just worked in this type of high flying spot fest, but with a hot crowd behind them.
Yeah, I think it's so fun because both of them are quote unquote high flyers or have high flying ability, but they also just have a very logical approach and ways to ground that. Like it's to me, my former co-host Reg, who's all for flippy do stuff. I'm more selective in my favorite types of flippy do's. I feel it all should be appreciated, but for me, the more tactical stuff is what works. And we get a ton of that from AR Fox and a decent amount of that from Blake Christian too, especially as he's working heel. I always appreciate it when wrestlers adapt their skill set to be in line with their characters. Like Blake Christian is so much more underhanded with his offense as a heel. And I love that. It should. We saw a low blow here. My only complaint with this match, and this is nitpicky, but we're here to pick nits. Like, I'm kind of sick of Rick Knox's entire personality being that he's bad at his job. I'm okay with refs that miss things more often. I'm okay with refs that, like, you know, in tag team action, because it's an 8-man tornado tag, you just can't keep up or whatever. The idea that he just is, like, so blatantly awful as his job as, like, a trait now is, it's really starting to take me out of some stuff. And I like that different refs have their personalities. Like, I like that Aubrey is very expressive. And I like that Bryce is, like, kind of the more middle-of-the-line guy. And he knows MJF's going to cheat, so he thinks ahead on certain things. Like, I like that referees can be a part of the story. But, like, Rick Knox just, his whole thing is that he just misses so much. And I just don't like it. Like, I just don't like it. But that's just me. I don't know if it takes you out the same way, but it takes me out of matches.
I think I'm just numb to it at this point. Like, you remember, you review NXT. I don't know if you remember back in, like, 2021 NXT, when they used to do, like, a championship matchup and used to do the intros in the ring. And they would always put, like, you know, nowadays they put, oh, your title history or last match you won. They used to put tangibles. Used to be, like, resilience.
Oh, my God, that's right. Yeah. Yep.
You know what Rick Knox's would be? Incompetence. Sure. That's his intangible. His
question, intangible. Possibly blind. We don't know. Like, I
possibly blind.
I forgot they did those intangibles. Those were, that's a terrible idea.
Oh my God. What a dumb idea. It was so bad because they wouldn't even, sometimes they wouldn't even put like adjectives. They would put like nouns. And it's like, how can you be this? This is a what?
It's also like every wrestling promotion has their own style and some are more spoon fed than others. Can you leave something to the crowd to figure out? Like if his thing is resilience, can you let me learn that about that man or woman? Like, let me learn things so you don't tell me adjectives about stuff.
That was the era of WWE just smacking you in the face with everything they wanted you to know. They would smack you over the face with it.
That was not like the best time for SmackDown. And I had not been on Fightful very long. And I forget, it was just a particularly dumb episode. And it was when I was Sean's co-host on SmackDown before I took it over. And we went to start the stream. And I just went, God, grant me the serenity. And I think it cracked them right before we went live, too. I think we got on air laughing at that. But we've got some super chat love coming in from you guys. Meet Normus with a very generous super chat. Happy holidays to you, Meet Normus thing. On the 13th day of Christmas, my true love said to me, let's crank happy all the days. If I had to cut a You People promo on Mama and Sister Normus for having the audacity to ask me if I want regular or turkey bacon. You know what? I think that's a fair promo because I know that about you and I'm not your sister technically, and I'm not your mother. So I feel like you're entitled to that. You're entitled to that kind of anger. Thank you for the generous chat. Let's crank indeed. Rafael Garcia saying, this is your reminder that Rick Knox is the former senior referee of Lucha Underground. Now, like, that made sense in that theatrical and Lucha heavy of an environment. But it just feels like we go to that well so often, man.
And don't get me started on Lucha Libre referees. They might be the only people worse than Rick Knox. I'm sorry. When I be watching that Triple A show and the referee just be blatantly cheating and stuff.
Yeah, oh, it's ridiculous.
How do you have a job, sir?
Triple A even worse, yeah, than CMLL shows. But Ricardo saying Rico getting the TP tribute was wild AF. Yeah, so it was so funny that you said that's what got him in, was like that with Ricochet and Will Ospreay, because actually my cousin is in the chat. I brought him to his first AEW show and he hadn't really followed the product. He knew MJF and a couple others, but he can correct me if I'm wrong because he's here. But I think Will Ospreay was the one that, when you see him live too, it's just like the entrance, everything he can do. I think he's worth their weight in gold and an inevitable world champion probably sooner than later. But
they need to headline World's End with the Continental Classic Finals. I'm sorry, if you're having two Will Ospreay matches in one night, you need to have one of them be the main event.
Should be your main event.
One of them should be your main event, because that's going to top them. Nothing's going to top that.
What an unbelievable... This C2 has not been as fun as last year to me, but I've still enjoyed it. Will Ospreay is just genuinely one of the best tournament wrestlers ever of all time.
Yes.
Like between Okada is unreal too, and he's, I think, more versatile than people give him credit for. But some of why he was one of the best tournament wrestlers ever was just because he was booked so protected. Will Ospreay giving Darby the match that he gave him, which was probably my favorite Darby Allin match since, at least singles match, since Full Gear against MJF in 2021?
2021.
Oh my God. The time.
I was there live for that one. I'm sorry, I had to say it.
Of course you were. Was that at Hammerstein too?
No, it was in Minnesota.
I saw Rob Booker. Yeah, why were you in Minnesota?
Hey, I really wanted to go to that show. I missed out on All Out that year, so I was like, oh, I gotta go to Full Gear. But that was one of my
favorite pay-per-views they ever did. That pay-per-view was incredible.
Because it was the first edition of it, and I felt like for the most part, a lot of matches were either good to great more often than not, more often than this year, at the very least.
Sure.
With the first Continental Classic, I think that's why there would be most people who will prefer that one over this one. But I would say I like the stories being told in this year's tournament. Sure. And I think more stories are being told in this year's tournament than last year, because I think one year later, the two main stories that I remember from last year's Continental Classic is the underdog story, 0-2 start for Eddie Kingston, and then him winning the tournament against his former best friend, and Daniel Garcia losing the entire tournament and winning at the end. That's it. Really, that's it. I mean, you had the cool story with Mark Briscoe, but I think the real ones that are going to be remembered are those two. I feel like, I hate to say this because I love Eddie Kingston, but I may have liked Ricochet's story in the Continental Classic.
Well, that's all the time we have for SV3, folks.
I'm sorry. I love a true heel, and I love someone I've been a fan of for so long, but then I realized, oh no, but you're really great at this other thing. You're really great at this. Like, you're great at doing the flips. You're great at the high flying. You're one of the greatest of all time. But oh my God, I think I love you. I think I love you as a heel.
It's giving early Kurt Angle vibes. It's giving early Kurt Angle vibes, and I love it. This actually just means so much that I love that you guys love wrestling and not always crapping on it like other pods. I'm a support forever. Thank you so much, because we are very critical of the ROH product on the show because it has felt creatively aimless. But we love the talent. We both love this promotion so much. It's why we continue every week to do this. And All of the criticism is we try to keep substantially based. We don't hate for the sake of hating. And it's in the hopes that the talent get the creative care that they deserve. Creative care that they deserve. Well, you mentioned that the crowd was very hot for AR Fox and Blake Christian, both at the pay-per-view. This match they were alive for, too. I got to say, the other thing with Hammerstein was any venue that's tiered like that just looks awesome, because it looks like the ring is enveloped kind of by these tiers, and it rules.
And the chants just sound different in Hammerstein than any other place I've ever watched wrestling live or watched it via television. It just sounds so different. Like you, it just sounds louder and more echoey in Hammerstein.
I will save you and everybody in the chat and the 3,350 of you tuned in to watch right now an incredibly boring rant about the acoustics of Hammerstein Ballroom and how, because it is built for a venue for music and the way it's designed and the wood and everything, I will save you that rant. But there's a reason those chants sound really good, and there's a reason it's a legendary music venue. The only place that would probably sound cooler would be Red Rocks Live, and I don't think you can really run a wrestling show there, but it would be very cool to see them try. It would be very cool to see them try.
And also, to agree with you one more time, but also make my point again, I think Darby Allin versus Will Ospreay is the greatest C2 matchup in these two years. I think there's no better matchup than that. I loved Eddie Kingston versus John Moxley and both Eddie Kingston versus Brian matchups last year, but Darby versus Will, like, there was no time wasted. That thing was like 13 minutes and it was just all action, and it was Will showing how great of a professional wrestler he is, because that's a Darby Allin match. If you didn't know, that's a Darby Allin match wrestled. But it's Will showing that he can wrestle, and Darby showing that he can meet Will right in the middle as well. So
I don't know if it's my favorite. I'll say it's one of the most productive ones that I've ever seen, because my hang up with Darby is that I feel like I get too much of the same match out of him. He's always doing incredible different stuff, but it's always daredevil stuff. And so to me, that starts to read the same. This match, similar to the MJF one, but different stylistically. With Max, it was like, where Darby is chain wrestling. Like, where did this come from? Like, it revealed this whole other side. The headlock takeover stuff obviously was incredible. With this, I was like, this is what I want to see out of Darby Allin, because this felt like he was still trying to win a wrestling match with wrestling, but incorporating all the daredevil spice that everybody loves about him. But it felt like Will grounded him in such a different way. Only complaint, never, ever do I need to see another Styles Clash to the Outside like that again. I was terrified that Will was the way he landed. I was like, Will Ospreay just blew out his knee. I was like, and then he was selling, so I knew he was okay. But I was like, I never need to see that again. Not even because of Darby. The way Will came down, I was like, no thanks, I'm good. No more, ever again.
That's why at the Darby coffin drop on the edge of the ring frame. Like, I'm okay with an 8-inch spot, but like that, oh my God. I was like, I was doing the Devon Dudley cell. Like, I was just
That's what God. I had said. I think the only spine he has left is the tattooed one. I think that's why he got it, so that there would be a semblance of a spine on that kid. But let's keep working through this ROH episode. There is a lot that's kind of crossing over here, which is fun. We have Commander, who's in the C2, our new TV champion, at a really wonderful emotional moment that was broadcast online too. Absolutely loved seeing that. But we're going to dig into Lee Johnson with EJ and Duka defeating Serpentico with the fish hook. Ushiguroshi, if I'm saying that right. Very cool. Very cool. I'm glad it seems like, first of all, Lee Johnson was like most improved wrestler of the year and then absent, and now it feels like he's back. So I'm very excited that he's back, because underrated, because he's on ROH, was how crisp and deliberate his offense became, and how sharp he looked. And then he just kind of went away for a while because there's not a men's singles division in ROH. Hopefully that's changing. But glad to see he's back. Serpentico, for some reason, beating Sidney Akeem last week. Taking the loss here. We're 50-50ing Serpentico now. But perfectly fine. This was just in there to continue to build Lee, I think, which is great. What did you think? I love the finish, by the way. Keep using that forever. That looks so intimidating and ow. So that was my thoughts.
Hey, I like this new attitude from Lee J following up from Final Battle, because I was quite surprised they lost. And then I was even more surprised that they turned heel. So I'm looking forward to seeing how this progressed. I don't know how much it says for Lee Johnson that he needed help from EJ to beat Serpentico. But Serpentico is riding high on his
that
record,
win.
On his record one match winning streak. So
it's true. It's true. He's on a heater, that Serpentico. But what I think the attempt is, right, is that they need each other. These two guys are going to need each other. So I'm excited to see how that develops on the other side of the coin, too, because why EJ needs Lee Johnson when he's a charismatic monster? That's my new nickname for him. I just decided it. Coined it. I'm going to sell t-shirts.
Charismatic monster.
I like it. I'm selling t-shirts. Why and how he needs Lee, I think it's going to be interesting, because I don't think it's a mentor-mentee thing. I think they're a package deal. And I'm excited to see how that plays out from a storytelling perspective. Guys, get in your super chats. Leave a thumbs up on this video. The chat asking, where is Anthony Ogogo? I believe on paternity leave. He had a kiddo. I don't know if he's still away there, but I would think that would fall in a reasonable time frame of hanging out with your newborn kid. So
he was in the Shane Taylor Promotions video package. So he's
which is around. What we're about to talk about next. This vignette for STP, which of course is Shane Taylor, Lee Moriarty, Anthony Ogogo, Tris Adora, Sean Dean, and Carly Bravo. And Shane Taylor says they're coming for everything. Stop me if you've heard it before, SB3.
I was like, wait, I feel like this is a vignette that I've seen before, one. And two, I feel like Shane Taylor says this at least bi-monthly. It's a bi-monthly reminder that Shane Taylor asks for title shots or says he's coming after titles, yet doesn't get those title shots.
SP3.
And he was a promoter at Final Battle. I was literally was saying that to Kimmy at Final Battle. I was like, man, he really got Shane Taylor acting like he's a damn promoter.
He looked so cool, though, I gotta say. He looked so cool. And when he got so pissed off and called for the second referee in the Pure match, he was like, hold on! Like, his whole tone was so... He was great at it. But yeah, he should have been wrestling, unless he's not medically cleared to do so. But I haven't heard that's the case. I'm watching this vignette, and I'm like, you've got one of the coolest women I've ever seen in my life standing there. You've got one of the, like, most fun, I would say improved as an act, like, coolest versatile tag teams that you have out there in the infantry. You have Shane frickin' Taylor, Anthony Ogogo, who's like, I'm British and I knock people out. That's awesome. And you have Lee Moriarty, who just put on one of the best Pure matches I've ever seen in my life, and definitely one of the best under this umbrella. There was some fun stuff between Wheeler and Garcia, but this was, like, easily the best since then. Can we buy them a fucking win? Like, why? Why is Undisputed Kingdom winning on a 0 hour? Why is this not on the show?
I was like, why is Undisputed Kingdom on the 0 hour? Two, why is Shane Taylor Promotion losing on the 0 hour? What are we doing here?
I was at my parents watching this and I said that out loud. Because also, I don't think you caught this live, but toward the end of the match, Carly Bravo gave you meme material for the rest of your life. His face just went... And then they lost. And I was like, what are we doing? And my parents were like, what are you talking about? And then they were like, why are you crying over this guy that you went to go see do magic last week? Last month. It's like, it's a lot. Leave me alone. But they got a history lesson. They got a pure wrestling history lesson that they did not care about. They were preparing for a Christmas party. They didn't give a shit about anything I had to say, but they pretended. God bless them.
Oh, that's
God
sweet.
Bless them. I know, sweet. They're the best. I'm so lucky.
That's what my missus always says, because my mom messages me and just says like random stuff. Like last week, she was like, I'll actually read it. I'm actually going to read what my mom messaged me last week.
Let's do it.
Because it popped me. It popped me so much. And I really didn't have like a proper response. So I was just like, thank you, mom. Just thank you. She said, what did she say? Oh, Chris Jericho is on Channel 5 saying he will be at the Hammerstein Ballroom this weekend. He's from Queens. Smiley face emoji. And I said, oh, wow, LOL. She said, he said he's a wrestler for 30 years. That's half your age. Smiley face emoji. He said if he wins, he's going to Studio 54 and dance. It popped me so much. I literally I was like, you're gonna love this, because she loves it. She's like, oh my god, that's
of course
just the cutest thing ever.
Well, and today she said Hammerstein Ballroom in the heart of Astoria, right? Or 34th
I'm in the heart of 34th Street in Astoria. I was like, he did it again. Never leave New York.
This is perfect. Stay. I love that your mom texted you. I love that she was like, first of all, wrestling things, I have to text my son, and then gave you a breakdown of his appearance on Channel 5. That rules. That absolutely rules. Oh my god. Let's keep working through this episode of ROH. Guys, send in super chats for SB3's mom. Send them in for my parents, they learned way more about Nigel McGuinness than they ever wanted to, but We move from Nigel McGuinness talk to some strong style here, with Shibata and Tommy Billington defeating the Premier Athletes. Stunned that the Premier Athletes are taking a loss here, but we get that diving headbutt PK combination, and it feels like we're headed toward a Shibata versus Tommy Billington mentor-mentee relationship story, which I like. I also like that Josh Woods is on the other side of it, because there's some history with Shibata and Josh Woods, obviously. However, I don't know yet, but it does feel like they have no other ideas than to be like, Shibata should mentor someone, or he should be in this trio for no reason. Like that's pretty much what the only well we go to with Shibata. However, he is the wrestler and it works. So I don't know how I feel about it, because it feels a little lazy, but it also feels like that's kind of what he should be doing a little bit. And yeah. I like this also for Tommy Billington. I also would like it if this was headed towards rebuilding the Pure division in general, because Josh Wood should be in that picture. Tommy Billington should be in that picture. Shibata should be sniffing around it, things like that. So I hope that's where something like that is heading. Did you get kind of the same vibes that I did?
Yeah, I got that too. And I was really, I honestly would say I liked it, because I was like watching this matchup and I was like, man, this Shibata setup to be the mentor of Tommy Billington was better done than the current ROH World Tag Team Champions, where it was just like,
oh, yeah,
hey, you're from Texas. I'm from Texas. We're in Texas. Let's win some titles in Texas. That was the story. This one, at least you had a match to set up them growing respect for each other and then teaming up with one another. That's a simple to tell story, but a lot more effort than what we got with Sammy and Dustin. So I appreciate that fact. I appreciate how well they work together. I appreciate the Premier Athletes, because like I say every week, they are the most over jobber tag team in Ring of Honor and AEW. They always get a reaction that the athletes suck, athletes rule stuff is over with the live crowd, and it works every week. And I always shake my head like, I can't believe this works every week.
You want to do that with Aria Daivari? Fine. You want to do that with Tony Nese? Fine. Josh Woods should not be near that shit. I'm sorry. His ceiling is way too fucking high. Way too high. Way too high. You mentioned like the tag titles being built around Texas. What if I told you that the trio's title was also just because of Texas? Huh?
Because if you actually remember, because when you said Shibata should mentor someone, I was like, you ever remember when Shibata was mentoring the Von Erichs, and the Von Erichs taught him the Iron Claw, and it led to Dustin Rhodes and the Von Erichs winning the Ring of Honor World Six Man Tag Team titles? Like, what? What? Who goes through this? Like, don't they have, like, a continuity manager? I think that's what AEW and Tony Khan. That's what I said. You need a continuity manager. They need someone.
I feel like continuity directors and managers are supposed to be looking for really nuanced and detailed things. Yeah. I'm just talking about someone that sits and watches ROH and says this makes literally no sense at all. That's all. Just someone who on a surface level is watching it, because some of the stuff we are not like in the weeds here picking out details. This is like, this guy was mentoring these people and it led to someone else coming in and winning the trios titles with them because Texas. That's not like, oh, remember this thread from 2012 that we're weaving back in, or like, hey, remember he can't do this because he was behaving this way. No, we're just talking about like watches the show ever level stuff. Ridiculous. Hey, but I'll tell you what. I am very impressed by the work of this young rookie up-and-comer, Tony Storm. New signee. Incredible stuff. Defeating Rebecca Scott here in her ROH debut with the Storm Zero, I think it's called, which is a really interesting finisher. Kind of reminds me of Mariah Mays a little bit. I don't know her that well, but I was impressed. I was impressed by what we got out of this Tony Storm.
I don't know. Like, I think I have to talk to you because you've been doing an excellent job, Kate, promoting the Fightful Awards. And, you know, you've been doing a great job. It's coming up soon. Voting has been underway for a lot. But, you know, I saw that a couple, 2 weeks ago, Sean stopped the voting for Women's Match of the Year, because Mercedes Moné and Hazuki happened at NJPW Strong Style Evolved. I don't know about y'all. Maybe the people watching, we got over 3,600 watching. We need to start a petition, and we need to start over the Rookie of the Year vote.
I agree.
And we need to get the late edition of Tony Storm. I think that if we let this year go out without Tony Storm being on the ballot for Rookie of the Year, because I've never seen a rookie who just feels like they've been wrestling for like a decade, who feels like a three-time AEW Women's World Champion, who feels like she was the ace of Progress Wrestling, who feels like she got a pie put in her face by Charlotte Flair. Like, I've never seen this like immediately just feel like a veteran and the ace of a whole entire promotion. I've never seen a rookie this good. This Tony Storm, she's got a lot of upside.
So she, and I don't, look, we don't do like the gossip thing here. That's just not what we do at Fightful. And I don't like to give men credit for women's accomplishments, but I'm wondering, there's rumors that she's like together with Juice Robinson. I don't know if you've heard this, but like, I'm wondering if like maybe he's kind of like helped her along a little bit. Like, I don't know if they trained her. Obviously, how would I know that? She just got on the radar. But if that's true, like, I wonder if that's coming to play, because Juice is great. But you know what it is? Juice is a little nuts. But Tony Storm just seems like a young, eager up-and-comer. I don't think she's got anything going on, like, mental health-wise at all. She seems like just on the straight and narrow. So
I think that everybody should just jump on board this bandwagon, because I think she's got a bright future ahead of her.
I think she does too, and you should all be tweeting at Sean while he is at the MSG House show and finally on a well-deserved vacation, that he needs to amend the Fightful Awards to include Tony Storm. It's stand what his attention Tony. Should be focused on right now. So stand she's up for just Tony. Been too impressive. On a sincere note, the level of difficulty of this character, is very, very high. And she is hitting every single beat of it. And I'm just so intrigued to see, is she playing herself? Is she split personalities? Is she playing Mariah so that it's her path back to the championship? Like, this could go so many other ways. But the behind-the-scenes stuff that they did with her, with RJ, and the stuff that they were doing with her entering the Stein, as she calls it, unreal. Like, just that's stuff that just actors would have trouble with, I feel like. And she is absolutely, absolutely killing it. So very fun for her to make her ROH debut. Absolutely loved this. So much fun. Next, for some reason, we get the longest match of the night, I think, which was the throwback match to 2005 of Colt Cabana defeating Nigel McGuinness. Were you there for that, SP3? Why don't you tell me about how you were there for that? Like, you're there for every match.
I was not there for this.
It's my favorite throwback match they've ever done, Ben. Simply because I don't have to be jealous about it. This was unnecessary to put in this episode.
I would say so. This was rather, didn't really need this on the show. Would have preferred something like from, they should have, like, if I'm editing this show, I would have put a homicide match. I would have done the homicide match, play the homicide match, and then right into a throwback match with homicide.
Amazing Red. Like anybody from New York, a match at Hammerstein even, because this was not at Hammerstein. Love getting to see young Colt Cabana all fresh faced and there against Nigel. This was Rocky Romero and Homicide defeat QT Marshall and Aaron Solo. Love getting to see Rocky in action. Commentary doing a great job of putting over how important of a figure he is in wrestling. And Homicide, the big surprise here as his tag team partner, kind of been waiting for him to be sniffing around the AEW product. He hasn't really made appearances at Grand Slam or anything like that. So absolutely love this. Shane Monster calling out the Rottweilers thing, which is so important and such a nice Ring of Honor history callback. But they beat QT Marshall and Aaron Solo with the King Kong Lariat from Homicide onto Solo. Nice to see Homicide around here. Like, that was a really nice move, and I kept waiting, especially while Eddie Kingston was on his rise, for Homicide to kind of fold back into the pictures, but I loved the Rottweilers thing here. This was a really, really cool idea, and I loved Caprice just marking out, being like, this is the ROH we love and know, and I was like, yes, it is Caprice Coleman. So very, very fun there. Fun match. QT Marshall just continues to be so valuable in the role that he serves, but this was all just set up an exciting return for Homicide to Hammerstein Ballroom to ROH. Very, very cool to see. Very, very cool to see.
Huge pop for Homicide on this show. Like, we don't usually hear that lot of a pop on a Ring of Honor weekly show, but it was nice to see Homicide in New York City in the Hammerstein Ballroom. Always go back to my first time in Hammerstein, seeing him win the Ring of Honor World Championship from Brian Danielson. It was nice to see the Rottweilers reuniting here. Rocky Romero, one of like the MVPs.
First time to win the Hammerstein Ballroom. I'm SP3. I saw all the cool matches, and Kate saw none of them live.
That was my impression of SP3, guys. Send in super chats if you want more. I'll go all day. I'll go all day dogging on SP3 for getting to be at cool shows that I wasn't at.
Very well done. Very well done. But yes, Homicide getting a win here. It's a lot of fun. And I think that this won't be the last time we see Homicide on Ring of Honor television. Spoiler alert.
I was going to say, could that be because you were also at other tapings and you might know that to be the case? This was a situation, too, where you were right about, and Kimmy Sokol asked about this in the media scrum, actually. Kudos to her for asking this, of like, are you going to come back to Hammerstein? Because the subtext there was, because you should. And it's kind of fun as AEW is shifting their live venue strategy to see these hot spots like Texas. And like, they kind of wore out Chicago, but that's starting to come back alive. New York, certainly. I think LA's been good. Vegas feels like it kind of died out for the Double or Nothing tradition. So it's like they're starting to adjust, and I think find their zones. Hammerstein seems like the zone. If you're gonna do stuff like this for Homicide, like, hell yeah. So
do Atlantic City for Double or Nothing. Do Atlantic City.
Did you go to the Atlantic City taping when they were there?
No, I did not.
It was a blast. Like, it was not the most fun venue, but like, the environment was there. Most of the hotels, it was right on the strip. So if you were staying at a hotel, like, the experience was so much fun. The seats were very uncomfortable, like, weirdly so. But yeah. That was like Keith Lee's debut and a couple of other fun things happened on that show. That was, I don't think it sold great. I don't think it sold poorly, but I don't think it sold great. But I wish they would go back there because that was a fun one. That was a fun one. Maybe it's GCW territory. I don't know, but
they can't go out there, man. You can't go into the Bloods and Crips.
Not in those territories. Are you kidding me?
Can't do
SP3, it's time for the best moment of the night where we get to touch tips. Thank you so much. Mansoor and Atlantis Jr., that Nepo baby, Atlantis Jr.
The Nepo baby with his father, Atlantis Sr., and his mother, Alanis Morissette. I cackled. Oh my God, Kate, I cackled.
I was in stitches of just like the satirical aspect of calling luchadors Nepo babies is something that is so funny. And I can't believe nobody's really done before, but like as these characters is perfect. Like, so funny that the idea of lucha wrestling would be like a Nepo thing is so funny. The Atlantis Morissette reference was so great. That match was like, felt like it kind of started slow, but at Final Battle, like when Mason started to get a little more involved and like toward the middle to the end, it picked up. Obviously it was there to set up a big Danhausen return, but like, it kind of felt like the chemistry was off, and then midway through and later, like really picked up. I can't get enough of these guys, man. Like I'm so happy for them and so impressed by the way that they've been able to acclimate this male modeling character to make it something that works in the ring and to weave in all the double entendres and pop culture references so that it feels fresh every week and not like, I think it keeps it being from overwhelmingly gimmicky. And because Mansoor is so smooth in the ring and Mason is so strong and great, like it's so hard sometimes with comedic wrestling to make people laugh along with you instead of at you. And they just do so every time. They do so every time. But this promo is just fantastic. They're talking about the match at Final Battle and they rant about Danhausen interfering and Mansoor kind of wages war on all masked wrestlers, which I thought was such a fun thing to throw in there too, because Danhausen wore a Danhausen match to reveal that he was in fact Danhausen.
He took off his mask and he had on another mask, and Mansoor's like, I don't think that was a mask. No, it wasn't. That can't be anyone's face. No, no one's that ugly.
No. These male models. They're great. They get the win over Dustin Waller and Kylan King with that centerfold. That's such a fun finisher, man. Like when they started doing it and they were like, yeah, no one knew we had a cool finisher because we were never allowed to win WWE or even attempt it. Like the matches couldn't get that far that they would attempt a pinfall there. I'm glad they're working back on ROH because that's where they were originally intended for. I would love to see them in more tag action. I can't imagine Danhausen cursing Mason Madden isn't going to come back into play. You don't bust out the human teeth for nothing. So we will see where that heads. But any thoughts on the match itself? Just kind of a nice standard win. MXM doesn't pick up a lot of wins because they're so bulletproof in that way. So it was kind of nice to see them get a W here.
Yeah, you kind of have to see people win before they take a loss, because then the loss means just a little bit more. So I like the fact that they gave him a squash win here, and like you said, the centerfold is such a great finisher, and it looked devastating on the guy in this matchup.
Rafael Garcia is saying, you know, MXM makes me realize I miss Dalton Castle. Me too. I was hoping he might be ready for a Final Battle. That would be such a great place for him to come back. I don't know the status of his injury. We never want to confuse our eagerness for him to be back on screen with anything along the lines of rushing him back from injury, certainly. But he's been out for a while, and he's so integral to the fabric of Ring of Honor that he's extremely missed. He has this long-standing history with Johnny Wrestling, or not Gargano, but Johnny TV.
Jonathan Television,
as it were. Thank you. So if he's going to come back into a program, that could be a very fun one. You could pick up anybody to play the boys, and you have a trio versus trio match right there. Would be nice if the six-man titles were around. But every time I get MXM, I, like, love them. And then them with Danhausen, I was like, remember the Stefan sketches from SNL?
Yes.
That's what it started to feel like. A vampire disguised as a vampire with human teeth. Like, that's how it started to feel, like, models that wrestle. That's, I was like, this feels, and it was in New York, so perfectly appropriate. Yeah.
All makes sense.
Speaking of New York, the Learning Tree cuts their promo in the streets of Astoria, where Jericho accepts Anthony Bowen's challenge for a match on the 27th edition of Rampage, which I believe is the final Rampage, I want to say.
The final AEW Rampage.
What a mean thing to do to Anthony Bowens on the way out. But there you go. I'm excited to see Anthony Bowens in singles action. But the big thing here was him calling Herald Square like the heart of Astoria. Like, these intentionally mismatched references have been hysterical. So
couple of blocks away in Flushing. My favorite bodega.
The King of New York, ladies and gentlemen. Well, this is something that I didn't love that I think most people probably do love. So I hate when that happens because I never want to come across as a hater. But we do get our MIT Expulsion Act. And Athena, of course, retained, as we were talking about at the beginning of the show. And there is a minion expulsion meeting here. No longer emergency, but expulsion. And Athena kind of swerves us here. She sets up everything to make Billy Starks kind of feel guilty with her shortcomings under her wing, and says that she has sucked so bad it's continued to be a problem for MIT, but losses are one thing. She's been complaining and bitching and moaning the entire time. But then she swerves and says that Lexi Nair, despite being the valedictorian and kind of gassing her up, says Starks is the one that's going to stay and Nair is the one who's going to be expelled for bamboozling that mic spot in the championship match, for saying that her entrance was bad, all of these kind of things that happened at Final Battle. Here's what I'm really excited about. I think this means that Billy Starks is still going to become champion. It's just a matter of when. I hope that it's sooner than later, because I don't know if this is going to have the juice to sustain us for months and months and months on end. So I'm hoping it's like a first TV kind of thing, if they're ever going to announce TV or get TV. Because I don't think this sustains itself all the way through. Now, if ROH does anything that's a part of that Texas weekend, Billy beating Athena in Texas at All In weekend would be huge. Or if that was on any of the cards that will be taped there. That is a long ways away. So they would have to do a lot of work. What I don't like about it is that it feels like a lazy cop-out from a creative standpoint. Everybody involved did a great job with their roles. Lexi looked shocked, as she should. Billy looked like she was feeling dejected and then was shocked that she stayed in, but then was kind of like, do I even still want to be under her wing? Like, what are we doing? Like, very, very well done. And Athena's always great with this stuff. I also liked that she told Lexi, like, what happened to the penguin getup to my Two-Face? That was funny. So I like all of those things about it. It does feel like they just went to the well again of like, well, we'll just, Billy's aligned. Even though she lost, Athena's going to just keep her under her wing. Like, we just did that literally a year ago. This is the exact same thing. So this would be like if Cody lost to Roman twice or whatever. Like, it just kind of feels like, what are we doing? So I don't love the creative direction. I'm skeptical that it can sustain itself that long. Athena is unbelievable. So if anybody can pull it off, I think she's the woman who can. And Billy is only going to continue to grow and get better. But to your point, their second match wasn't as good as the first one. And I don't think they've become less capable wrestlers in the time. I think they had less of a story to tell because the build was thrown together in 2 weeks, yet simmering for 5 months, as we talked about extensively. And I think that handicapped them in what they were able to do in the ring. Like, the layers aren't there for you to dig into as much. So I'm a little nervous about that, but I'm hoping that this means we're still eventually leading to Billy Starks as your new champion. where do you sit on all of this business?
I'm conflicted because I feel like this segment on the show was very well done, very well executed, but I'm just like, I have so many questions from before this show. Like, why would you book Billy versus Athena again if Billy's not going to win? Like, I'm almost sure there is a reasonable AEW replacement that could have filled that spot for Billy and still been worth putting into the main event. And with the idea of, okay, we're going to do this three times a charm storyline, she has to get closer to winning. She got farther from winning.
Yep.
She was, because literally, you went on this show, what was it, 2-3 weeks ago, and showed us the first matchup. The first match, she was definitely a lot closer to winning than the match that I just saw live in New York City. She lost. She went into an exposed turnbuckle. She got hit with the old face, 1-2-3. The year prior, she got hit with the old face. She kicked out.
Yeah.
Athena had to invent a submission to beat her in 2023.
Yeah.
And that was the best, that was the better of the two build-ups to the matchup. That was well done. It felt like it was concluding and being blown off at the right time. You were getting a crescendo. You dragged it out for an extra year. You let it simmer for 5 months. The quickest 5-month build I think I've ever seen, because you did nothing for 4.5 months and then decided 2 weeks before, oh, let's make that matchup. We should probably do that because it's going to be the main event of the damn show. Did that and then booked the matchup where Billy lost a lot. It was a minor inconvenience for Athena. Yeah. In comparison to last year, it was a minor inconvenience of Final Battle this year. And you literally didn't even tell the proper story, because the proper story, especially because we just saw the matchup for 2023, is you have Lexi interfere to help Athena win the retain the title at least this year, because you didn't pull the trigger last year, but then you didn't even try it this year. Like, she asked for the microphone and all that, and you just did the same thing you did the year prior.
The only way in which Billy looked smarter than last year was because she had that spot scouted. The rest of it, there were no layers that said, I'm smarter than I was last year, I'm faster than I was last year, I'm stronger than I was last year. Like, the two things that you're saying now that came up on the post show of Final Battle were, if you're going to have her lose, why are we doing this match in the first place? Which you just kind of said, like, just don't do it. And they handicapped themselves by showing that match, the first one, because the second one better evolved the story, and it just didn't. It just didn't. And that's unfortunate, because that's not a fault of the performers at all. There's just... It doesn't seem like Billy learned or grew outside of that one spot with Lexi. She had that scouted and nothing else. Like, she, so that's a shame. That's a shame. I hope that if it is going to be a trilogy and Billy makes it to the top the third time, you know what's funny? I was thinking of Alex Pawlowski with this, because he thinks, and I said, and I really like this idea, an NXT with Obafemi and Javon Evans. And he said you could do this with Wesley too, but that you have this thing where you have a character arc where first time you face Obafemi, swatted out of the air. Just smushed, lost. Second time, so close, but Obafemi, he's just too much. And then the third time, you overcome him. Clean, simple, character arc grows out of that. Huge payoff, because it's the third time around. And Obafemi's got no reason to be scared. He already beat you twice, right? Sure, I'll accept that third match. His arrogance gets in the way. It's his hubris, whatever. Could have done that with Billy. Like, which to me says that this was not the long-term plan from the beginning. Because that was not calculated. The second match didn't evolve anything from the third match. And that's a damn shame.
And literally they had, it was all set up for them to have Billy win, because you've done, people forget that the whole story starts with them having a match at Forbidden Door in 2023, where it was Athena really kind of washed Billy. It wasn't that close. It was Athena getting the win, minor dominance. Yep. Then it was a war of attrition last year. And then it was slightly more of an inconvenience from that first match in the third match, but still Athena wins. Athena 3-0.
Athena Starks, slightly inconvenienced, a trilogy for the century. You know what I mean?
Like, slight inconvenience. Part one, Forbidden Door. Part two, Final Battle. Part three, Final Battle. Part four. It's like, I don't need a fourth one.
No.
Why couldn't you just stop at the third one? The third one was great. It was great.
That's a really good point. I think a lot of people forget, including me, that Forbidden Door was where that started. This would be a fourth times the charm story. Technically, Athena now having the title for as long as she has certainly makes that feel that way, like a third times the charm story, but this it would be their fourth time. So unfortunate. And to your point, I also agree that I thought the segment was very well executed by everybody involved today. Like, none of our gripes are with anybody that was involved. And it did have the crowd, who was, I think, kind of fatigued at this point. So good on them. But it just feels like they are booting it, which is a bummer. But
you're putting it down the field, if you
will. Yeah.
They're just punting this one. But like I said, I like the segment, how it was executed. I like what it sets up. But I also 1,000% agree with you. This is a 2-month, 3-month story. Do not drag it past that.
I agree. And the other aspect to that is, like, I think now I feel very confident that Athena's probably losing at Wrestle Dynasty, which sucks. Because I think that's probably the impetus for things to start to unfold again.
I think the reason why she wants to keep Billy close is because she thinks that Billy can be the one that does beat her.
Sure.
And she has an advantage over Billy by being her basically her mentor, and she could keep her. She knows every trick she's going to do. It's like the reverse of the Mariah May Toni Storm storyline, where Mariah May got close to Toni Storm to eventually dethrone her for the AEW Women's World Championship. Athena is keeping Billy close because she knows that Billy can eventually beat her to dethrone her for the Ring of Honor Women's World Championship. But she also knows that by keeping her close to her, she knows what Billy's going to do. She knows what's going to happen next with Billy by keeping her close. Whereas Lexi at this point was expendable to her. She was expendable, so I understand the thinking, the rationale behind everything, but like you said, it's not a long-term story.
It also makes the fact that Billy didn't come so close to beating her all the more senseless in this, because Athena shouldn't, there's nothing for her to be intimidated by coming off of that match, unfortunately.
Yes.
Guys, we're about to close out our Ring of Honor episode. Final call for Super Chat. Thank you so much for the support tonight. Still almost 4,000 of you watching, which is pretty cool across platforms. But we have our new ROH Men's TV Champion, Commander, facing off with Johnny TV and Mansoor and Mason in the crowd saying, if Johnny loses, we will be very sad, which I thought was a very nice take on the Will Riot signs. Like, just that's a little aggressive, and I appreciate that they understand that. But
they're liars in New York. You know how many if Billy loses, we riot signs I saw,
not,
and no one rioted. No one didn't even
couldn't
no one.
Find a riot. Couldn't find a riot to save my life. Liars, all of you. Very disappointed. You're kicked out of ROH post show. University training, because you didn't actually riot. SP3 would have rioted, but he had a scrum to go to. But if he wasn't at a scrum, he'd be rioting. I know that about you.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm all for the riot.
Well, let's go back to Lucha Underground here with Johnny TV and Commander. As I mentioned earlier, very nice and sincere moment with Commander. What I'm excited about here is there's like a million really great luchadors in AEW, it feels like, and none of them have really been on like a trajectory proper. Obviously, we know why with the Lucha Bros that's the case, but there's some really, really great lucha talent that's hanging around. Bandido was lining up for a title shot. Commander winning the TV title. It feels like we're starting to get on track with some of them, because it's mostly been like, check out these really impressive matches, and then they don't have anything else to sink their teeth into. I think Amanda has really acclimated beautifully to AEW television, especially in the past 4 to 6 months or so. It's felt like he has really found ways to, what's the Chris Hero thing, that Mexican and lucha wrestling is pageantry and acrobatics and American wrestling is moral struggle. He's found a nice marriage of those things where it feels like the storytelling in ring has come alive in a different way. So I've appreciated that growth, and you've seen it throughout the tournament a little bit, even though he's mostly been there to take losses. But you knew this was going to be fun because you knew Johnny TV was going to be a good dance partner for him. You knew MXM was going to be sniffing around this, but that sign had me howling of, we'll be really sad with the sad face emoticon. Like, so good. So good. But this was a fun way to close out. And I'm always happy when there's champions around the product. I know it was a symptom of the tapings, but I am hopeful that perhaps we'll have a champion that's defending their title on TV a little bit more. SP3, what did you think?
I think so. You could tell how like happy a Commander was to become the TV champion, and how much it felt like an honor to him. It felt like kind of like a trophy for all of his hard work. And a ring, if you will. And yeah, it felt like kind of like a reward for him stepping up when the company needed him in the Continental Classic. And then he got a further reward by getting a win in the Continental Classic. One more win than I thought he would get in this year's tournament. So I was happy to see it. Even though when I saw the lineup for Dynamite going to Dynamite on Sunday, I was like, I have a feeling. I told my friends that I went with, I was like, I think Commander's winning this, because I was like, Commander winning this, the only way Will can make it to the playoffs. I was like, well, Commander's got to win.
Yeah.
So I really enjoyed that one, the story of that matchup. And then the match here was a lot of fun. Just MXM, the different camera shots going to them kneeling down in their human elevator before making their way down to ringside was hilarious. And then being taken out with the big moonsault before Celindo Lindo. I've been learning the name. It's not Rope Walk Shooting Star Press. He's got a name for it. So I'm glad to see this kind of turnaround for Commander being used more, and him kind of improving over the time he's been with AEW. He's come a long way from that initial matchup with Jay White all those months ago.
Agreed entirely. Some good stuff there, and it also allows Brian Cage to probably head into the tag team picture a little bit cleaner with our friend the Murder Hawk over there. But just Ricardo saying TK ready for Rebecca Quinn to dethrone Athena. Let me tell you what's not happening. I don't think that everybody who's been rooting for her to be back in any promotion, I don't blame them. She's one of the best wrestlers in the world. But I remember Sean saying on a post show that he was like, you know what she's worried about right now? Her cherry tomatoes. That's what we were talking about last time. So I don't think she's in a rush to get back. But I think it's Billy's to win. It's Billy's to win. It's just going to be a matter of building out or dragging out this long-term story, depending on what they choose to do with it. We're going to find out. We're going to find out over the course of the next few weeks. But we will see.
I still think Athena wins at Wrestle Dynasty. I got my fingers crossed.
I would love that. I would love that. I think it would be very productive use of booking. I just think it's going to be Willow because she doesn't have an AEW title right now and isn't really near any pictures. And she has the crossover with New Japan. So it feels like she can walk the line of kind of both sides because she's a presence in both. Yeah. But and CMLL, actually, what am I saying?
I'm hoping Willow wins the title if she wins this cup. If she wins the the International Women's Cup, she better win the AEW Women's World Championship in 2025.
I also just think that's a fun handoff of assuming that Toni Storm, this rookie, dethrones Mariah May. Like the program you could do with delusional Toni Storm versus Willow Nightingale, who would just look at her in the funniest ways, I think. Would be very fun. So, but guys, we are going to wrap it up here. Thank you so much for joining us on your holiday week. We hope that you have a continued safe and healthy and wonderful holiday season. We'll be back on January 2nd for this show. Fightful schedule has us off for New Year's Eve and New Year's Day, just so you know. So that'll be another week without sour graps for us in the AEW post show. We'll see if Alex can sit out that long. He might get itchy. He might need to rant about like Darby Allin or Shawn Michaels at some point. So we'll see. But that is the plan for the rest of the holidays around here. And we will let you know a date for the Fightful Awards coming up pretty soon. So thank you so much for joining us tonight. Thank you for joining us for that final battle post show. Thank you for joining us for this post show. We'll see you in 2025. How about that? unless inevitably I'm like, SP3, can you fill in for whatever? That'll probably happen. That'll probably happen. But we'll take it a day at a time down this holiday stretch. Thank you so much. And we'll see you next week.
Wow. What's up? I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
New year, same great savings. All in the Kroger app.
Get Kroger Spiral Sliced Ham for 89 cents a pound with your card and an additional $25 purchase limit too. Then get large avocados or mangoes for 99 cents each with your card and a digital coupon.
Shop these deals at your local Kroger today or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.